So hello and welcome to Balancing the Act. Today I am with Peter Wendy, who's mentally 18 years old and physically 49. He's an explorer, a minimalist, and an ultra runner. So thank you, Peter, for taking the time out and joining me on Balancing the Act. I'm waiting to ask you so many questions.
Good to be here. Looking forward to talking to you, Kevin.
So Peter, let's just dive straight into this. We have very little time. You have a packed schedule. So how did this journey, you know, start, and how did you come to India? You're not from India. Tell us where you are from and how you reached India. And it's been 20 years here. So, you know, give us a little insight into that.
Yeah, so I was born and brought up in Belgium, in like the center of Western Europe, you can say. Raised there, finished my studies. And then through fate, one given day, my manager in my company asked me, I was just working for 2 years that time. He was asking, Peter, are you interested to go to India and recruit some software engineers in the year 98? That's 23 years ago. So I said, yes, why not? India was a big unknown to me. But yeah, it has been an exciting journey to jump from the West to the East, a totally different culture, a totally different level of development. And it has been an amazing journey. I'm so grateful that I got this opportunity to come to India. And it was for work. That was just the Monday to Friday thing. But India really, overwhelmed me in terms of its natural beauty. Very soon I was exploring the Western Ghats, the Himalayas on my Enfield Bullet. And from the Bullet, it became a cycle, mountain biking. And then from the cycle, it became running and hiking. And now basically, in the last couple of years, it's about long, long journeys, month-long journeys over thousands of kilometers, exploring the beauty of the Western Himalayas from Uttarakhand all the way to Kashmir. And it has been an amazing journey. Belgium would have been a pretty boring, flat kind of developed kind of environment, like nothing like the raw, wild, virgin, natural beauty of India.
So if you have to define yourself today, who would you call yourself? I know this has been a long journey of you, say 20, 25 years coming to India, going back. What is this journey like for you?
Yeah, I think what you are in life depends and changes over life, right? So initially I came for work and I was a pretty neat corporate employee. I spent 20 years actually in a corporate cubicle, trying to maximize the most out of the weekends and the 20 days of holidays available in the year. So that was my previous life. I think 40 years ago, I changed. I got reincarnated, you can say, in local terminology. I quit my job, a big step, because you get a lot of money and a lot of comfort, but it was really amazing. Get out of the city, switch to a minimalist life and live almost full time in the mountains, just with one t-shirt, one shorts, one little tent, a small backpack, and go for these long journeys. So defining myself today would be more like a nomad, where I was like a corporate slave, cubicle dweller. Now I'm a nomad who, I don't want to settle down even at this age, like you say, 49. I'm not married, I'm free. I don't want to settle down in one place. I don't want to get stuck and mentally bored in a daily routine of the city. I want to be free every day. It's an adventure for me. I hop over from this valley to the next valley behind me. I meet amazing people. The people in the mountains are so innocent, so much hospitality. There's so much natural beauty here. You come across unexpected challenges, like you were saying. You come across naturally physical obstacles, landslides, streams, weather conditions. But it makes life so exciting. So I feel so much more alive in the mountains than in this daily routine of the city of chasing money, basically, which is a never-ending addiction.
You've done these long journeys and long trails. It takes both mental and physical strength to do this. If there is anything that one needs to understand before he starts this journey, any tips on what you could do?
It's all about leading a balanced life, right? Many people, and especially in India, because of parental pressure and societal pressure, it's like full focus on studies, on career, then on marriage, then on kids. There's no space for the real side of life, where you go outside, you look at your physical fitness or even psychological well-being. So you need to live a little bit of a balanced life. You cannot put 100% on money and career and college. You need to go out 4 or 5 times a week for a small jog, play some sports, go jump into a lake, do some swimming, go for a run, go for a beautiful cycle ride in nature. So you need to stay connected with your naturals. You need to physically act. Many of the diseases are not related to viruses or COVID. It's all about lifestyle diseases. People eat wrong, people don't move anymore, and they get sick at a pretty young age. So lead a healthy lifestyle, stay connected with nature, and then everything will fall into place. Once in a month, in the weekend, go for a hiking trip, pitch up a tent in the mountains, and it'll really, get you. You will get so much of positivity from spending 2 days in the mountains, so much of both mental and physical goodness you will carry back, which will prepare you for longer journeys that I am currently doing.
You mentioned going for a hike. Recently, you've been on a long expedition to the Great Himalayan Range. Tell us why the Great Himalayan Range.
Yeah, the Great Himalayan Range, I mean, that's a bit the focus of the last couple of weeks. It's already pushing in winter. October is not the best period. Snow is falling at 4,000 or 5,000 meter altitude right now. But the Great Himalayan Range is like the highest ridge line, you can say, the highest range of mountains that separates the lower Himalayas from the upper Himalayas. When I say upper, I mean Zanskar, Ladakh. So crossing that range, which is like 5,500 meter altitude, is amazing, because you go for long day journeys on like an extraterrestrial kind of terrain. You walk across moraines, glaciers, scree. And if you do this solo, it's just you and the overwhelming magnificent landscape. So it makes like a huge impact on you also, like in terms of, you know, like almost like a journey towards an inner journey, you can say. Meditative and very challenging. So like that, I did a couple of passes, the Kangla, which is quite known, and the Umasila, a bit lesser known. So great traverses in like beautiful, like it was completely white. There were 2 days weather, so it was covered with fresh snow, early winter snow, and walking across those 25 kilometer long thick sheets of ice, glaciers who are like receiving snow at the same time they are melting midday because of the sun. You get these big crevices where you look like 20 meters down, so you have to be a bit careful where you step. And then pitching up your tent there in the night and looking, once the sun sets down and you look to the sky and you don't just see the stars, you see the entire cloud of the galaxy actually. So you kind of feel like a cosmic connection all alone there, days away from any human settlements in a very overwhelming landscape, which gives you so much of internal peacefulness, so much of beauty. But at the same time, of course, very, very challenging in terms of steepness, terrain, and quite extreme weather up there, pretty cold. And so, yeah, it's been quite amazing to go through that that special piece of the Himalayas.
So I do remember sleeping out in a tent and being in a very cold climate. How do you acclimatize to such a condition? You know, it's very cold. I feel I just wanted the sun to come out once it was like 2-3 in the morning when you know it was misty outside. Even the sleeping bags are not helping. The heaters and the warmers are not helping. You know, you're in -2, -3, -5, -10. I don't know what minus degrees you are going to be sleeping. And you're sleeping alone. You have no one to be with you. What is this trick to sleep well in night in tent?
A couple of things. I mean, first of all, you're talking to somebody who used to go ice skating in his shorts as a young boy on the frozen rivers of Belgium. That was all before global warming, of course. Now the rivers haven't frozen for 20 years, I believe. And secondly, is I've been in Chennai for 20 years, which is a very hot and humid place. That didn't help. That caused some transformation in my DNA. So I don't like the cold too much. But definitely, you need some good gears there. Like right now, is a very nice friend of mine from Himachal who supplies me with some extremely lightweight and very warm gears. So I've been last winter in Uttarakhand. Now at least it's over. In last winter, in peak winter, December, January, I just to take some nice sunset and sunrise pictures on top of a completely exposed hill where my entire tent got frozen. Even my contact lenses, I couldn't remove them because the liquid was freezing. So on those places, I mean, extreme places, right, where you get exposed the entire night to freezing wind, I was able to survive pretty well because of some really good gear stuff of my friend, who I'm kind of field testing, you can say. His website is Blue Bolt Gear. He makes amazing stuff. He's like a startup, very intelligent guy.
Check it out, guys.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, you can always carry, of course, a lot of weight and blankets with you. You can stay warm, but you need to have a balance between weight and comfort. If you carry too much weight, again, you're going to suffer a lot in terms of pulling up that weight on very steep traverses. So I'm being an ultra runner, I usually go for very lightweight stuff and sometimes push the balance a little. Like, I would rather choose for lesser weight than comfort in some of these extreme cold conditions. But yeah, the nights are cold. Daytime is not a problem. You can see me with shorts on glaciers and freezing streams. Say, people ask, how is that possible? No jacket, just in t-shirt. But that's okay. I mean, I go pretty fast. I'm a light guy. I'm a fast guy. So there's a lot of internal body heat that gets generated. So as long as the sun is up there between sunrise to sunset, things are okay. But like you say, in the night, as soon as the sun sets down, bam, temperature drops 10, 20 degrees. And you need to, I think, rule number one, get out of the wind. Find at least a place that gets you out of this cold night wind. That makes a lot of difference already.
So we were talking about Zanskar, and Ladakh is a very famous region for its monasteries. What difference did you find from the Tibetan style of the Buddhist the scenery over there? What is the difference between that monastery and any others that you've, you know, witnessed in any parts of India or Tibet?
Yeah, Zanskar is actually historically very special because it's very remote. I mean, the only way to reach, traditionally speaking, Zanskar is through Srinagar and Leh. Then you have to go to Kargil all the way, and from Kargil again, it's a long journey. It's located in central kind of Ladakh. I mean, between Ladakh and Kashmir, you can say, and Lahore. It's very difficult to reach. The first time I went, it was in 2015. I took so many days actually through a couple of passes to enter Zanskar. And because of its remoteness, its original like Buddhist culture and monasteries were like beautifully preserved. It was safeguarded from the mass tourism you have in other parts of like Leh or Shimla or Manali, where the local culture gets a little bit changed because of so many tourists coming in. Unfortunately, of course, Zanskar now, army is building a third axis straight through Zanskar to get like all season access to the border with China, unfortunately. So that's definitely going to hit this beautiful jewel, which was preserved till now. But Zanskar is special. As soon as you, again, go across the Great Himalayan Range, the monsoon clouds, the rain doesn't reach there anymore. It's a very dry area. It's like what they call a high altitude desert. Gradients and the shades of the mountains and the rocks is totally different. It's, if they just put you there, you open your eyes, you won't believe that you're on planet Earth anymore. You're walking on a different planet. And then if you see these thousand-year-old monasteries, which have been built on steep rock faces in natural caves, where the Buddhists are meditating, they are chanting these prayer songs, playing on music, and God knows how, even in the winter, they are completely disconnected from the rest of the world in 6 months. That's an amazing kind of landscape, actually. It's a totally different world. And let's hope the government is building tunnels, is building highways now, two-lane highways, to which will run across Zanskar. I really hope the culture of that place gets preserved, because it's really unique. It has been there for thousands of years, but because of development and unfortunate like geopolitical military reasons, these places now change very fast and lose some of their ancient heritage.
So what kind of meditation or breathing techniques do you practice? Is there anything that you're looking forward to learning, or is this something that you picked up from India? We want to know, like, this is something that I think is intriguing me, and I'm sure will intrigue a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, people, we are all kind of now a bit living in cities and in concrete environments. It's a lot of comfort, but at the same time, we are victims of being disconnected from our important natural roots for millions of years. We have all evolved just like any living creature on the planet from jungles and nature. So, right, we go to breathing techniques, we go to yoga, all kind of methods, which I feel are related to the fact that we are stuck in cities. For me, I don't do anything specific. For me, I'm anyway in nature, I walk through nature, and that gives me meditation, that gives me peace, that gives me physical activity, that gives me a lot of probably invisible energy. If I go from a city to, like, say, here in Manali, the Peace Valley, I walk through these apple orchards, that's fine, to cultivations. But if I go to raw, virgin jungles where not even human settlements or cultivation is there, I can sense an energy, a primal energy that you feel that there is some special connection there, which you can absolutely not feel in places that are touched by the human hands. It gets to your core, actually. You feel so much of positive vibrance that's all you need. I drink fresh water from the streams. I breathe fresh oxygen from the forest. I align my daily cycle to the cycle of the sun. I sleep when the sun sets down. I sleep anywhere where the sun sets down, basically, and wake up automatically when the sun sets up. So that is enough for me. I mean, being in nature, there is no need for breathing techniques or these or stretching or this or that. It's, you're at the 200% peak of your health as you go on these long journeys to your natural roots.
So what is the ultimate goal of these hikes? You've been on a lot of trips, treks, hikes, whatever you may want to term it as, but what is the ultimate goal?
Yeah, I mean, people and modern life and cities and economy, it's about goals and about numbers and it's about watches. Oh, how much did I do? What will my followers say on Strava? But for me, it's not about the goal. For me, it's not about where I want to reach. For me, it's about the journey. The journey gives me so much of goodness along the way. It's not about where I'm going to reach 25 kilometers or I want to do this year or I want to cross 200 passes. It's about every day is a unique journey. I meet unexpected people. I get into amazing hospitality, heartwarming hospitality. I come across beautiful natural landscapes. So it's about the experiences along the way that really gets to you very deeply, that make a big impression on you. Also the fact that you're an explorer, you don't repeat or you don't follow the well-trodden, the commercial, the touristic places, but you explore, you go through jungles, you find places where most of the days I don't meet a single person. From the morning till the evening, it's just me, myself, and probably a lot of wild animals around me in the jungle. And that's like an amazing meditative journey. There's so much of, I don't know any other words, I keep saying positivity, but I get so much of natural goodness from that is my satisfaction in life. That's, I think, a little bit of inner peacefulness away from it, the modern hectic day life where ding 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 WhatsApp messages and calls and so much of mental disturbance. So yeah, this being one with nature is gives you enormous mental and physical returns, basically.
So to ask you a follow-up question on this, you mentioned a lot of animals are met during your journey. So what are these animals like? And, is there been anything that has endangered your life, or they do their own thing, you're on your own way and there's no issue?
So again, that's like a frequently asked question. Any interview I do, people ask, hey, what about wild animals? First of all, the term wild animals is wrong. Animals are not wild. It's us people who have extinguished about 30% of the biodiversity on the planet right now. So we are the ones, the major threat to the planimals and the other species who share this planet with us. I've been roaming for 10 years in jungles in South India where wildlife density is much more than in the Himalayas, where it's a bit more challenging. Even here for 4 years, they almost full-time have never had any negative encounter. I mean, I don't believe animals want any harm to us. We just enter their habitats, and they have their own food pyramid. They have their own ecosystem. They are not preying on us. If you avoid any surprise or encounters, or if the animal feels cornered, it might get back to you. But as long as you make your presence felt, animals don't have wish you any harm. So I mean, based on my experience, I would say not the animals. It's more like the extreme weather and some of the challenging terrain that is a bigger adversity of the hiker in the high passes of the Himalayas than the animals out there.
So my last question to you, Peter, what is your life lesson? What have you learned from so many years living in the mountains, living anywhere? What has been your life lesson, and what is one takeaway that I can take back home?
I think if there is one regret in life, I'm 49 years, 9 years old. I think I was 45 when I quit the corporate world and stepped into this beautiful life in the mountains. The only regret I would have is that I didn't do it 10 years earlier. Just like anyone, I was also a bit addicted to money and materialistic comforts, earning a lot, and hey, you're surrounding yourself with a lot of materialistic stuff in life, but it doesn't fulfill your soul. I think it's much better to just earn just enough for whatever food and stay, and after that, please focus on quality of life, whatever it is. I mean, some people go on long journey in the mountains, other people maybe here they run a homestay or they do some organic farming. Look at the quality of life. People don't go for step into this capitalism, consumer and materialistic trap. It's not going to give you any satisfaction in the long term. And life is very short, and we live on a beautiful planet. So your time will run out fast. Just my tagline said, right? Die with memories, not with dreams. Many people, I think, they have a lot of dreams, but they never realize them. And once they are old, when they are 60, 70, they all feel very bad, like that it's too late at that time to chase some of those dreams, to convert them into memories. So, I mean, while you're young and while you can, please get a balance and travel and see places. And it's a mind-widening experience that'll give a much more fulfilling life than doing the 9-to-5 and job and commute to traffic for 5 decades in life.
So thank you so much. I think you've answered all my questions, and thank you for your patience. Thank you for the insights, and thank you for everything. So it's been a great time speaking to you, Peter. I think I will see you soon, and stay safe and take care.
Pleasure being there. Thanks, Kevin. See you sometimes in the hills, probably.
Thank you.
Feel free to follow, like, and share. Thank you for your time, and as always, stay safe.